in one of the most memorable events in the life of Jesus, St. Luke, only St. Luke, gives us the story of Jesus calling Zacchaeus down from the sycamore tree, and then he invites himself to go dine at Zacchaeus' house with him. Now, Zacchaeus is a tax collector. This means he is a sinner, and a public sinner at that. He would have been among the extreme outcasts of the religious establishment. The story of Zacchaeus is the story of each one of us. Because if we are honest, let us ask ourselves, how often have we felt like the outcasts? How often have we felt like those on the outside? So the story of Zacchaeus, although short, iconic, and memorable as it is, presents for all of us the program for our turning from sin and embracing our Lord, Jesus Christ. So first, Zacchaeus was a sinner because as a tax collector, he fell into the vice of greed. Now, greed is one of the seven capital vices. Capital vices. They're also called the seven deadly sins, right? Now, the seven capital vices are called capital because they are the head or the capita of a whole list of sins that people regularly fall into. And there are seven: pride, anger, lust, envy, gluttony, avarice or greed, and sloth. Pride, anger, lust, envy, gluttony, avarice, sloth. Do you know how to remember this? It spells pale gas. Pale gas. Pride, anger, lust, envy, gluttony, avarice, sloth. Why pale gas? Because sin stinks. Now, I know it's really corny, but you will never forget it. You're never going to forget the seven capital vices. Now, although there are all seven capital vices, St. Thomas Aquinas would insist, along with the Christian tradition, that avarice or greed, second to pride, is the most deadly. Why? It's not because money itself is so evil, because it's not, but because greed turns our minds and our hearts away from God and attaches us to earthly goods. Greed is an unhealthy attachment to all earthly goods. So it's kind of a paradigm for sin. Zacchaeus, then, as a tax collector, was a man completely given over to greed, completely given over to lesser goods, completely attached to the goods of this world that could never satisfy. So what does he teach us then? I believe Zacchaeus teaches us the road to conversion through 5 points. There's 5 points along his path. First, Zacchaeus was short in stature. Now, yes, he's described as physically short, but these physical descriptions in the scriptures are always signs to us of something more. His love for this world, his attachment to this world, made him spiritually and morally short. Since he was in love with the world, he was a small man. He was small-minded. Friends, sin always shrinks our personalities. Attachment to this world always shrinks our minds. It always makes us small people. small-mindedness, pettiness, triviality. These are always features of the base attachment to things of this world. Two, because Zacchaeus was a small man, he could not see Jesus over the crowd. When our own greed, anger, lust, envy, our love for this world, our need for approval, when these things shrink our minds, we can never see Jesus over the crowd. It is always the crowd that blocks our view of the Lord, always. When we love this world more than we love our Lord Jesus, we will always see only the crowd. We will always see only the backs of those around us, nothing but the lowest common denominator of current public opinion or fashion. How sad. How sad. How pathetic. If there is one thing that history teaches us time and again, it is that the majority of opinion of the masses is almost always wrong. The popular vote is wrong. This is not our guide. Third, Zacchaeus shows us that in order to see Jesus, we must rise above the level of the crowd. If Zacchaeus wanted to see Jesus, he had to first raise himself up above the petty, temporal, insignificant concerns of the crowd and hoist himself alone in a tree. Now, for a tax collector of the time, this would have been complete folly. For a man of his wealth and prestige, this would have been complete buffoonery. In order to see Jesus, he had to first cast off a fear of being the fool. Friends, so often we are held back by nothing more than our own fear of standing out of the crowd, our own fear of looking different, of playing the fool. So often, our own infatuation with our own dignity and self-respect renders us incapable of risking any kind of ostentation. But here's the thing. If we fear a risk of standing out, we will never grow. If we are terrified of standing out of the crowd, we could never see Jesus through the crowd. Our fear of being different keeps us small. Four, Zacchaeus teaches us that if we want to see Jesus, we must put our bodies in his sight. So often, we hyper-spiritualize the Christian life. We pretend that Christian spirituality is somehow a disembodied reality, free from our bodies. It's something we do with our minds only, not with our flesh. It's something we do with our insides, not with our outsides, as if these are somehow different, or as if we can separate these. Zacchaeus teaches us the foolishness of this, the foolishness of this presumption. Friends, we must put our bodies before Jesus. Put our bodies where we can see him and he can see us. And we are so blessed here at St. Dominic's in Benicia, California. We have a perpetual adoration chapel where the very presence of our Lord Jesus Christ, body, blood, soul, and divinity, is on display 24 hours a day. We can just enter and say, "Hello, Jesus. Jesus, you know that I love you." We don't have to commit to an hour. You don't have to commit to a half hour, maybe just 5 minutes, or just 1 minute, just 30 seconds. Just go in, say, "Hello, Jesus, you know that I love you." And put our bodies where Jesus is. And also, this is why when we are in the physical presence of our Lord Jesus Christ, when his very presence is with us in the tabernacle, when we enter the church, first we always genuflect. We put our bodies in a posture of prayer. Not because God needs it, because we need it. We need to put ourselves where we can see Jesus. This is why when we enter the church, his presence, our bodily comportment represents a dignity of the place. We keep a solemn silence, and it's so important. Not because God needs it, but because we need it. And when the tabernacle is open, we kneel. We put our bodies in prayer. Because what we do with our outsides will very soon be what our insides will follow. Fifth, Zacchaeus repents and uses his wealth for the service of the salvation of others and the penance for his own sins. His wealth was not itself an evil. It was not. Money is not an evil in itself. But for Zacchaeus, it became an evil. It became an evil for him because it pulled his mind away from the one thing that mattered, which was our Lord Jesus Christ. He says, Zacchaeus says, "Behold, half of my possessions, Lord, I shall give to the poor." And thus he uses his wealth for the salvation of others. And then he says, "And if I have extorted anything from anyone, I shall repay it four times over." And then he uses his possessions to atone for his own sin. Thus he turns his wealth to good. Thus the cause of his downfall, the very means of his sin, became the occasion for his salvation. The very means that pulled him down was now the very ladder that held him up. This is the meaning of the wealth, the meaning of temporal possessions, to put them at the service of the gospel and at the service of others. And then Jesus turns to Zacchaeus and says, "Today salvation has come to this house, because this man too is a descendant of Abraham. For the Son of Man has come to seek and to save what was lost." This is why Jesus came, to seek us sinners, to save us sinners. And this is the paradox of the good news of the gospel. The good news begins that we are sinners. Yes, you've heard me right. The good news must begin there, because until we embrace that fact, we cannot even begin the road of Zacchaeus. We cannot even begin the journey. The journey towards God will make no sense without that. We are all like Zacchaeus, the outsiders.